Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
Is there anything anybody loves more than agreeing with Tausch?
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
I got a hunch this isn't going to be concise either.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
I would say that you are pretty easygoing. You're actually probably more easygoing than I am.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Well, there's no, you're not easygoing at all.
Hey!
On 100.5 ESPN, the ESPN app, and Wisconsin On Demand.
Wednesday edition. It's the most wonderful day of the week with Brian Bulaga and Old Crazy Homer and Double Trivia. It's the most wonderful day of the week edition. Are we ever going to get the tease paid off from Old T edition? And the Jesse is off today, but it is to take Mo to the veterinarian, which, as a dog lover, I'm not going to make fun of him. Others on the panel, I'm not here to speak for other people. Edition of Wilde and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam. ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker. Streaming video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. And, of course, everything you need on WisconsinOnDemand.com and the Wisconsin On Demand app. I'm Jason Wilde in Green Bay, freshly showered for the program today because Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin will be here at noon at the Wilde household. And I didn't want to be, you know, gross for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Look forward to Alex and Ryan coming by. Riley Yauch is our cousin sub of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. For Jesse Riley, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jason. How about you?
We're happy to have you along for the ride. It's been a while. Jesse's worked quite a few days in a row, so it's good to have you.
Yeah, I know. Me and Tosh were talking about that last Friday, I believe. So, good to be here.
It's been a while for Yauchster. Yeah, missed him.
And from his undisclosed location, the aforementioned Packers Hall of Famer, he is Mark Tauscher. Tausch, good morning. How are you? And will you be paying off your tees?
So, I don't know if I want to pay off the tees because I'm not even really sure what the tees
was.
That
was my concern. Yes. That's,
and that's again, why I know some folks get after me about interrupting you from time to time. But
no, not me.
You know how this goes.
I
know
yes,
you don't.
I do.
That's why you're the best.
Yeah,
that's why you're the best. But I think it was the there's a couple of things that have been on my mind. The one is this whole discussion where people had been getting after me about being a homer and thinking this team's better than – and I think for the most part, been pretty crystal clear about where I'm at. I think this is a team that's good enough but has not been consistent enough. And there's some really good teams in the NFC that – could be blockades for this squad to win. But they've won games without playing their best football. That is a good sign, and I still believe they will start playing better football. And if they do that, yeah, they can win the whole dang thing. And if you want to say that's homerish, that's great. So I jumped on a thing that I didn't think I'd get onto for a long time, and that's AI, artificial intelligence. Not Blueski. I went on Grok.
Oh,
I think it's called Grok.
Now, wait a minute.
I signed up for Twitter, whatever that is, to get analytics and all that stuff as we're doing more digital things. And one of the things that it allows me to do is punch in questions. And you get to see biases from different artificial intelligence sources. But I just wanted to see if I'm crazy. So
okay.
I put it on AI Grok. And I don't know, Jason, I don't think you didn't get a check. You're not going to do that.
I used to have one, and then your guy decided that legitimacy doesn't really matter.
You're an anti-Muskite. Well, trust me, we should digi-only what journalism is. I would love to have that discussion, but not on this platform.
No.
So anyways, here's where we're at.
Brock.
And Grock put down the pluses and minuses. They kind of go through a litany of things. I asked, can this Green Bay Packer team win a Super Bowl? And I just want to read the in conclusion part, which I found very interesting. In conclusion, while the Packers have the talent and are showing signs of being contenders, their path to the Super Bowl would require consistent play, particularly from their defense, and perhaps a bit of luck with health and matchups. They have the capability, but also face very stiff competition in a very crowded NFC landscape. And when I saw that, I thought, I'm very nervous. I think artificial intelligence is coming at a really fast clip, and it's because I don't know if I could write that up. I wouldn't use the boring of terms as what AI Grock did. But I think that's a pretty fair assessment of where the Packers are through 12-10 of 2024.
Okay, so if I may, because this is a hot-button issue for me, where do you think Grock and ChatGPT get the information to create this artificial intelligence answer that you're getting?
I think from the web.
Right. So,
all of
so from Domofsky and the real people like me who do radio programs and tweet out polls about which team in the NFC are you rooting for, all those things, AI is like a clearinghouse for all that, and then it distills it down for someone like you. So it takes all of our work, including yours, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
And then gives it away in a boring format, as you just put it. How can you be a fan of that?
I didn't say I'm a fan. I said has anyone said they've been more concerned about artificial intelligence? All I'm saying is this
Elon's
is another
version.
This is a stark reminder of how fast this thing's moving. And I know we joke about robots and everything else, and now I'm looking up and I see there's stuff going on in, is it New Jersey, where I don't know what the hell's going on with drones flying around. I don't know what to think of anything anymore. All I'm saying is this train is a-coming, and I don't know what to make of it. All I'm saying is I read this, I saw it, and I thought, that's pretty accurate. That's a pretty accurate assessment. Yes, they're getting it from us and from really smart Packer people. Agreed.
Badgers radio analyst.
So I thought that was a good synopsis, and it makes me more concerned about what's going forward than what was happening before. And that was it wasn't my greatest tease of all. That's why I was a little leery to even bring it up.
So concerns... Your concern is about AI. It's not about the description that AI gave you of the Packers. Like the fact that their defense what did it say?
I think the description of the Packers I think is very accurate.
Right. And so
and that
those
that
concerns
is
are baked into the cake. Right.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
There
you
go.
Just
I just want to make sure I'm crystal clear.
Oh, you're crystal
about that.
So, paint me the picture. Old T, very busy guy, right?
Yeah.
Got basketball.
Great
coach.
Interview with the new offensive coordinator yesterday, which I think I'm putting in a request. We did about 15 to 20 minutes. I'm trying to get an unedited version. We're going to play that. Aww. Either we could play the 8-minute clip. I want the whole thing.
Okay.
So we'll see, because there was some. It was a really interesting conversation. I did not know Jeff Grimes at all. He was with Andy Reid. He was with Mike Sherman. He has a long history.
Uh-huh.
He's an offensive lineman. That's his deal. So pretty good banter.
One.
Tried to find out some different things. With being the fact that he's been in the building for a day, it made it, but he could have given the I don't know yet answer a lot more than he did. So there's, and I'm going to AI that, and I want to see what they think of of that. I now want to check with AI, because there's another story that came out that I know we both have strong opinions on, that I think I want to plug in the old AI grok and see what happens there.
Could you stop saying
the
grok?
Michael Strahan, Mark Gastineau, Brett Favre. And I don't know what necessarily where to all go with that. Vinny and the boys asked me about it this morning.
Oh, how'd you handle
that? Do I think that Brett took a sack? I do. Yeah, I was very clear about that right after the game.
As a matter of fact,
I had someone, and I don't even remember who, if it was a player or a member of the PR staff, come up to me and say, chill, B, because I was pissed.
I'm aware. I was there.
So being a teammate, you have to understand big picture things. I didn't like that one bit when it happened. Of course
right.
I didn't.
So I was hoping.
So I'm going to plug in as you talk. I'm going to plug into AI
right,
Gronk.
Right, wait, just stop. Just hold on. Because among the things that I was hoping for was that, because this kind of came up yesterday, and you did not really have a whole lot of interest in going there. And then
when did it come up?
I brought it up because I said Joshie had sent me the clip of Gastineau confronting him, and I don't think you had watched it yet. And look, Mark Gastineau, from what I'm seeing from the teases of this 30 for 30, is kind of a knob.
He's pretty bitter.
His teammates,
he's very bitter.
He is, but his teammates like Marty Lyons and Joe Klecko are interviewed, and that's from my era of growing up watching football, the New York Sack Exchange, which is one of the greatest nicknames ever, by the way.
Great nickname. If it wasn't that great of a nickname, would they be that? Because it's the Purple People Eaters. You got
Monsters
of the Midway.
Yeah, it helps. Yeah, no doubt.
If it wasn't that great nickname, I don't think they got a 30 for 30. I'm just being honest.
I think you're probably right. But, you know, Marty Lyons is in there, and another defensive lineman is in there going, yeah, Gastineau loved to sack the quarterback, but he'd never played the run. He had no interest in that.
Great,
that you don't score points with your teammates when you do that. But
there's... By the way, there's been plenty of defensive linemen you can make that same claim about. Because
that's very fair.
As my old buddy Josh Sitton always used to say, you don't get paid to run block, you get paid to pass block. Well, pass rushers, they don't get paid to stop the run, they get paid to rush the passer. And we're not talking about Rashawn Gary not setting an edge, we're talking about him not getting pressure. So we're just as culpable in this as Marty Lyons, Billy Lyons, Johnny Lyons, and Denny Lyons.
Who is the guy that played for the White Sox? His last name was Lyons, and he like
Greg Luzinski?
His last name was Lyons, and he like slid into home head first, and he got a bunch of dirt in his pants, and he like unbuckles his pants right there to get the dirt out. It's a famous clip in baseball lore, but apparently famous to you.
Must be. You can't remember his name.
It's something Lyons. Steve Lyons, maybe?
Sure. We'll go with that.
So. All right, I don't want to do it now because I want to get to blog on time. But
yeah, Steve Lyons is the guy's name.
Good.
I just got it.
All right, nailed it.
Okay.
All right, so
thank you, OG.
I do want to get to this though because I love Sam Decker. Like he's a friend of the show. We really like him, but like he retweeted some video of the play, and oh, of course he ducked. You know, he's about to get his head taken off, Sam. Look at the play. They're run blocking. He ran a different play. Come on, man. Like, you got to know what's going on here. And so I don't want to we'll do this another time, and we'll put it on the list, and I won't forget even if you do. But this is fascinating, and it's germane now this many years later because they have the clip of Gastineau confronting Favre, and then Favre goes on social media yesterday.
What did you think of the clip there?
I don't like ambush journalism. Like, they clearly, the video folks, I mean, it's not like he confronted him and, oh, by the way, the camera just happened to be there at the time. Like, this was clearly a setup. Now, look, Favre's full of you-know-what, and if I could swear on the radio, I would say that word here. Because then he takes the Twitter...
Can you say the P word? Can you say the P word there, or is that not
allowed? It pisses me off that he would be so dishonest.
So you can say it that way.
I can say it that way, yeah. I just can't say what is in my urine tract or whatever you call that. So he goes to social media yesterday with his BS story, and what bothers me is that we now live in a world where enough people, if they just accept your lies. We were all there that fateful day at the Meadowlands. We know what happened.
First off, it wasn't a fateful day. It was an awesome day for us.
Well, no, fateful in terms of that moment that this controversy was born. You won the game.
Okay. Yeah.
But we all, those of us that were, I was saying this yesterday on the Home Hour with Strofe and John Anderson, I have seen the Green Bay Packers offensive line really, 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 really pissed off twice. Once was then, and once was on 4th and 26 when Mike Sherman told you guys, we get another 4th and 1, we're going for it, and we're getting it with some colorful language in, and then you guys punted late in the game instead of going for it. So I was there. I know that. I deal in facts.
So wait, those are the only two times in 30 years?
That's
impressive.
No. Only the only two times when I've seen you guys that pissed. Those are the two most angry moments that I've ever seen from the offensive line group. I think you would agree with that assessment.
Well, I just think there's been a lot of other. Obviously, those are two moments.
Yeah, I don't get to see them all.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you guys.
By you guys, it's good hyperbole. It's good hyperbole.
You wouldn't even talk to me after that Giants
Continue.
Game. Must have been after the PR guys got to you. Anyway, Favre is full of crap. And what he wrote on Twitter is a lie. And I don't know why he can't just say, hey, yeah, you know what? I was trying to do a solid for Michael Strahan. I didn't really think about all the unintended consequences. I'm really sorry to Mark Gastineau because I understand why he's pissed. I would have appreciated that and respected that a hell of a lot more. Instead, he flat out lies. That's not what happened. We all know what happened, Brett. So please don't do that. Now, can two things be true? Can Mark Gastineau also be a selfish weenie? Sure, that's fine. It's again not my concern.
Yeah, and I do wonder how much because it seems like he's irritated on a couple of fronts. Like that sack record is going to get broke. There's another game. Like, there's a lot of really good
for
players.
Sure.
But I get it. I understand that. The other part of it I don't fully get, like, is that one sack that Strahan got not the reason he's in the Hall of Fame? Like, no. That's apples and oranges, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make any sense. I think Gastineau came off pretty pretty bad.
Not a great
thing
look.
Too. I think he looked like an idiot. Now, with that said, I don't think I want to. I think he is ready. I think he would have loved to have went and sacked Brett, tried to break his hip right there.
Right there. Yes, indeed.
In that warehouse. Wanted to drill him.
Well, maybe we'll check in with Brian Blog and ask him how he would feel in this situation. But I want to get to him on time. So tell us about Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, and we'll table the great Strahan sack controversy for another time.
Yeah, it wasn't a sack, just for the record, so we all are on the same page. I've gotten a lot of Twitter mentions about that, and we will get into that later. Yes, that sack was magical for Michael, and so is Santa Claus, but his elves, they aren't qualified to build Pella windows and doors. Too many options, too many customizations. So instead of going to the big red fella, take advantage of this Pella deal. Get as low as $19 per window, $81 per patio door per month. Certain restrictions do apply. This offer ends on December 31st. Visit PellaWI.com to learn more.
I do want you to paint me a picture of you sitting in a lonely hockey rink or wherever you might be, asking Gronk all these questions, because I do believe you also asked Gronk to describe our show.
I did. I sent
And
you
if you'd
that.
Be kind enough to look that up and see what the answer was you got, you could tell us that.
I already sent it. I sent it over.
Or maybe I'll read it for you then. I thought maybe I'd give the floor to you, but that's okay. I'll read it from what Tausch sent me, and I'll do it next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
While the merry bells keep ringing, happy holiday.
What does Grok have to say about Wilde and Tausch? Well, let me tell you.
It's the holiday. How accurate do you think this will be, according to you and our fans?
I think it's pretty accurate, actually. So my question, as you know, is where did AI Grok get this from? Because Grok ain't listening to the show. And I picture, is it just me? Or what? Since your guy Elon named it Grok, doesn't it sound like a big ogre? Like, don't you picture kind of like a Shrek-ish looking character that's doing all the research on like a tiny little typewriter, hunched over?
I don't know.
In a treehouse.
I legit, whether it's ChatGPT, there's probably like 7 or 8 of these operations going. I don't know. I am firmly, and I don't want to go into conspiracy theories that your phone listens to everything. I think we all know that it does. I think it's just accumulating, and I think there's these data centers just churning through, and they spit stuff out. I don't know. Like, I am as intrigued by this as I am as intrigued by the drones flying over Jersey and everywhere else that nobody knows about. Like, I'm intrigued by a lot of stuff. Those are two things that intrigue me.
So you're in typical screenshotting Tausch fashion. I only have the bottom portion of Grok's description.
Yeah, I don't know how to send.
I'm not sure what was at the top. I assume it focuses on our constant discussion of the Green Bay Packers. But it also apparently we also talk about NFL and sports analysis. They analyze broader NFL trends, discuss potential trades, the performance of other teams, especially those within the NFC, and compare players or strategies with historical context. There's
what
also
I love, too, is they gave me some love for my analogy work, which I fully appreciated.
Fan interaction. The show often features segments where they take questions or reactions from fans.
Is this how you think? Is this how you think AI talks?
It's my Grok voice. Yeah.
Okay.
Cultural and local events. They occasionally touch on local Wisconsin culture, like discussing the first snow of the year or the impact of local businesses like Quick Trip and Fleet Farm.
Yeah.
And finally, humor and personal anecdotes. Their show includes lighthearted moments with Tauscher's Hall of Fame analogies and various humorous segments like Whoa, Nelly. I'm not sure that's necessarily humorous. And headlines presented by Fleet Farm. It does not say their headlines were better when they were songs. Finally, their discussions are known for providing both a professional analysis from Wilde's perspective and perspective as a sports writer, and Tauscher's insights as a former Packers player, blending insider knowledge with fan-level engagement. I'll tell you this. I'm not a fan
Pretty
of AI,
good.
But I'm a fan of their description of us for sure. So, thank
our buddy,
you.
Our good buddy Dan Kelly just texted me, said we should, now that we got Grok, we should put ChatGPT and see if it's a similar reading of it.
It's funny you say that, Tausch. It's funny you say that.
Okay.
While Jason was reading, I put it into ChatGPT.
What a producer.
Would you like me to read what ChatGPT says?
Well, do they write it out longhand with a quill pen or no?
No, unfortunately not. That's just a me thing. At first, it thought you were a popular German radio talk show, and then I had to specify that I meant the one on ESPN Wisconsin.
Sehr gut, Mann, ja.
Just wait. Is there a Wilde and Tausch German edition?
There
that
might be.
That we're missing?
Wilde und Tauscher, ja.
It's a popular Briefmark, and they go through all of the different stamp collectors throughout Munich and Berlin and Bonn, Bern.
Yeah, supposedly the German version revolves around a range of topics from politics to culture, sports, and societal trends, offering listeners a fresh perspective on the news. But going down to your actual show, the Wilde and Tausch Show on ESPN Wisconsin is a popular sports talk radio program hosted by Jason Wilde and Mark Tauscher. It primarily focuses on coverage of Wisconsin sports teams, particularly the Green Bay Packers, as well as other major sports news and topics of interest. Jason Wilde is a veteran sports journalist, and Mark Tauscher is a former NFL player known for his time as an offensive lineman for the Green Bay Packers. Their chemistry and differing perspectives, Wilde's journalistic insight, and Tauscher's firsthand experience as a former player make the show engaging for listeners, especially Packers fans. The show covers a wide variety of sports-related topics, including in-depth discussions about Packers games, player performances, and the latest NFL news. They also touch on other sports topics, such as college football, basketball, and even national sports stories. The show often features interviews with sports figures, coaches, and analysts, as well as listener interactions. Final paragraph here. The Wilde and Tausch Show is known for its lively and often humorous tone, blending serious sports analysis with fun, relatable discussions. The host's down-to-earth style and approachable manner make the show a favorite for Wisconsin sports fans looking for both entertainment and in-depth sports commentary, period.
Dude. We're the greatest show ever! You know what they forgot?
Quick Trip.
Potatoes.
Potatoes!
Potatoes!
Hey!
Potatoes are still for sale. You got a couple more days. You guys know how much I love Quick Trip, and you know what? I love a good deal, and Quick Trip always has them, but this is a really good one, especially with the holidays. Five-pound bag, russet potatoes, 99 cents. Just think of all the meals you can make, all those cozy fall recipes. Potatoes fit, and you got chicken. Oh, man. Roasted whole chickens. I just sent that picture of how to carve up one of those rotisserie chickens perfectly and quickly. Today is Wednesday. That means you can get bone-in chicken or chicken tenders, $9.99. You can also grab some white bread, 99 cents a loaf. And I'm still a believer that this is the best thing going. You get that rotisserie chicken on Monday. Have yourself a meal. And then later in the week, carve that bad boy up. Get those tortilla shells for $1.99 and make yourself some enchiladas. What a deal. And you got Don's Pizzas $4 for $10, and you get ice cream. Gallons of Nature's Touch ice cream, $5.99. Download the Quick Rewards app, order ahead, earn points, order all your favorites, save on fuel. What a deal that Quick Trip has, or you can get everything brought out to you curbside. And what do you always like to say, Jason? We'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time. Brian Bulaga gets to join, apparently, the greatest radio show in American history, and he'll do it next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in. But
you know what that music means. My favorite time of the week. Joining us now, it is Brian Bulaga and his tiny little Christmas tree. Brian, before we start, I have a question for you and Tausch. Would you say that Abby and Sarah are nice to you? Because here's why I ask. So Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin is coming. Alex Della, Ryan Pamprin. So I figure, hey, they're coming right at noon. So I shower. I got my workout in. I showered. Paula comes down here. She says, you know, Pella's coming at noon. I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. I showered. She's like, you showered. You don't look like you showered. What is that? Is that necessary?
Oh, man. Wow.
Is this commonplace in your marriages, too, or is this just me?
I mean, every now and again, I'll get a shot across the bow like that at me. I'll say, you know, I picked up a little bit. She goes, you call that, like, cleaning up? I'll be like, oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, I guess that. All right, sorry. My bad. Like, yeah, you're right. I guess that not good enough. That's fine. I get it. So, yeah, I mean, I get those shots. You know, that's okay. All right, though. I just take it. Take it, move
that's
on.
What you know, no need that's to, what I did.
No need to put up a fight about it. Take it and go.
I just took it and put it on the radio instead.
Hey, I know that I have a reputation when you join our program for bringing up certain events again and again and again. And I kid because I care, but I will not say anything about it today. I will just ask you a very straightforward question, and that is, the Green Bay Packers are playing in Seattle on Sunday night. Can you give us a glimpse into the challenges that come with playing a game in Seattle?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences out there.
Indeed, you have.
Mostly bad, to be honest with you. Mostly very bad. I don't think I've won a game there, to be honest with you. So now that I think of it, I don't think we've won a game out there.
You guys, I think you won in 18. I got to go back and look, but I think you might have won it in the 18 season. Mike's last year, maybe.
Maybe no. I think we lost that game.
Oh, you.
I think we were wearing all white. I think we were wearing all white that game, if I'm not mistaken. I think we lost.
You did 27-24. Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it was hard to go there and win, and when they're playing really well, and they're starting to play well right now, they have great support from their fans, and it is a very tough environment to go to, whether they pump in crowd noise or whatever it is with that stadium, it is very loud. And their team feeds off that energy really well. And you know, the last few years, I mean, I get they made a little resurgence last year and whatever it may be, but this is a couple years in a row now that this team is starting to show life again, right? They got a new head coach now, 1 year removed from Pete Carroll. There's a lot of positive signs coming from the team, and they're winning football games, and they have a chance to make a playoff push. So this crowd is going to get behind them, and it's Sunday night. It's going to be a pretty electric atmosphere, and these guys are going to have to be ready for it. And I'm not sure if they've been to this stadium. Have any of these guys even been to this stadium, Jason? Like a lot of these younger guys.
Yeah, so I was talking to Elton Jenkins, and as I was talking to him on Monday, it dawned on me that 18 game was the last time the Packers played there. So basically it's Kenny and Jair are the only two that have ever even played there.
Mm-hmm. So these guys don't really understand what they're about to go into. It's a rough environment. Now, I don't know enough about Seattle's defense and who they have on that side of the, you know, like, I don't know enough about them to know the challenges that they create up front, like they did when we were playing them, you know, with Bennett and Averill and Wagner and all those guys that they had, like that, with that crowd noise and that and those
Say
pass
it, Jason.
Rushers and
Jason, I know you. Jason is chopping. There's another DN that he wants to bring up that
in 2013, Bruce Irvin. In 2013, Bruce Irvin.
2012.
Or 2012, yeah, 2012, Bruce Irvin. Those guys with that crowd noise created a very difficult environment to play in, to communicate in, and to be on the same page. And so I'm not sure what it's going to be like with their front guys. But if they thought it was loud in Detroit, it's going to be very similar, if not worse, Sunday. So they're going to have to be on point with everything this week, and maybe even a little bit more than what they thought they had to do last week in Detroit.
Blue, how much did it change? And this is, you guys were an experienced crew, a lineman. You guys had, you know, when David Bakhtiari joined us on our players only, and we went through that looking at the quarterback's foot and all. How much of a difference from a game plan and a calling game, if you're Matt LaFleur, do you look at, especially early in the game, to not get in those positions where you're putting young offensive tackles in a tight spot in a really loud joint?
Yeah, he's going to have to be pretty cautious early on with how he kind of works this first 15, right? Like, he's going to have to be, I don't want to say, like, overly, like, protective of them, like, because you got to let the team play and you got to see how this thing's gonna, you know, work itself out. But you can't be letting these guys just, you know, 7-step drops and 5-step drops and leaving them out there alone within the first 15 a bunch. Like, you just can't do it. Like, this, I would, if it's me, I'm a lot of play action where you're keeping a tight end in, a lot of pocket movement, a lot of 3-step drop to open this thing up. Let these guys get a feel for the game. Let them get a feel for the crowd noise, what it's going to sound like. Let them get their feet set with getting off the snap count so they get comfortable within that first series. Because it's very hard to get comfortable there. Like, and based on how the momentum goes in the game, like, one series could be way louder than the next, and it changes throughout the game. So that first series, it's about as loud as it's going to get when you walk out onto that field. Like, unless it's in the fourth quarter and it's a tie game and you're trying to go down a score or whatever it may be, that first series is as amped up as it could be. So that's the time to let these guys settle in and figure out, you know, how they're going to get off the rock, how they're going to communicate. So let's, you know, make this thing as basic as you can get it to start. And we could talk about all we want. Obviously, the run game is going to be huge. We get that, right? Like, we have to run the football. That's, I mean, we could talk about that from game to game here with the Green Bay Packers and how important that is. But there's nothing better than on the road in a loud stadium to be able to run the football, because what that does, that bores the crowd, right? That bores the away crowd.
Right.
When they're not rushing the pass or almost getting close to Jordan Love or almost sacking him or hitting him, that quiets down the fans because they want to see sacks or hits. If you're just running the ball and you're getting 4 or 5 yards a carry, that bores them. And they quiet down and they sit down and all that. So, like, that's what you want to get into, right? And we'll see how Matt LaFleur kind of goes through that. But it all depends on how this game works itself out, right? Like, you really wanted to get into that with Detroit, but the game always, you know, the game plays itself out in different ways, and you have to adapt to it. But if I'm him, I'm kind of getting some easy ones to start with these guys to let them settle in and see how it goes from there.
Brian, I'm curious, and I did not get to take in the players only, but I had a brainstorm while I was walking the dogs, because that's when I do my best thinking. I would love for you, if we could figure out a way to do this, and of course I'm here to create more work for you, because that's what I like to do for people. I'm really curious, I think it would be fun for fans and for me, if we could do a screen sharing of you breaking down the film like you do every week, because I think it would make us all a lot smarter, because I love that you do it, and it makes us better as a show. I'm curious, when you do it, how much are you looking at the big picture and how much of it is you focusing on your area of expertise of the offensive line? The reason I ask that is because my project for this week, even though I wrote about it earlier in the week already, is I want to see how often Jaden Reed is open. Yeah. Because that is one of the mysteries of the last month, is from 5 catches for 113 yards in the loss to the Lions to being persona non grata in this offense. What the hell's going on out here?
Yeah, I was going to ask you the same question, because like it's kind of a head scratcher. So what I like to do when I watch it, right? Like I like to watch the with the All-22. It gives you that high up sideline view to start, right? So you kind of get the wide view of the sideline copy, which is not like the TV copy where it's zoomed in a little bit more. So you get the sideline copy where you can see the entire field. So I like to look at that just to kind of see, you know, potential movement from safeties and line, but, you know, just see general alignments. And then you can see some route patterns and where guys could be open or whatnot. And I don't, I mean, I pay attention to it, but like, it's not where I, you know, spend a bunch of time on, right? Like, the only way I'll go back to it is if there's good protection and he gets sacked, and then I'll go back and watch it again and be like, okay, well, was there anybody even open on this, or did he miss somebody, or what happened here, right? Mm-hmm. Where was what went on in the secondary here that he took a sack? So, like, it's not something I spend a whole bunch of time on. I mean, what I do then is I'll go back, or then I'll move on to the backside of the play where, you know, you can see some routes downfield, but it's really just the offensive line, Jordan Love, and you can kind of see that back angle of the play, and I'll just kind of go through it two or three times and watch the guys as you go through, and if you see a breakdown, so to speak, you'll watch that again and kind of just take a note of it and move on, and that's the way I go through it. On defense, it's a little bit the same way, right? Like, I think defensively I go through it a little bit the same way with the cornerbacks, because I'm not like, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm something that I'm not very proficient with breaking down cornerback play and safety play, right? Like, I see McKinney, what he does and how he's able to fly around, and Evan Williams, and like how good they are. Like, yes, that's very easy for me to see,
sure,
right? Like, that's very blatantly obvious how good they are. Like, I get it. But like, I'm not proficient in understanding the everything about them. So like, I don't want to make something up that I have no idea what I'm talking about. But when it comes to the front seven, which is why I prefer that one copy, that the second view, that's what I like to watch. So like the front four and the linebackers, that's the copy that I prefer to watch. And that to me is you get to see how D linemen fit, the linebackers fit, the pass rush and things of that nature. So all in all, I mean, normally, because there's no commercials, obviously, in the All-22 tape, it takes me about, I don't know, depending on how, like, the Detroit game, there wasn't that many plays, you know, for the offense.
No.
There were more plays for the defense. I mean, it probably took me an hour and some change to go through it. And mm-hmm. when there's longer games, it could take an hour and a half, an hour 45, just depends.
Okay. So what just, you're telling me is... So what you're telling me is you have no idea what the hell's going on with Jaden Reed and why you would not have your leading receiver getting the ball more. Because Matt LaFleur basically admitted on Monday that they're not doing a good enough job of getting him involved. That's on him.
What we asked Rob on Monday is that, you know, what's going on with it. And kind of what he told us, which makes sense if you're looking at them personnel-wise and what they're doing – they're getting to a bunch of 12 personnel,
right,
which is one back, two tight ends, right? And they're doing that, obviously, because they're very Jacobs-heavy, which makes sense. They're running the football, right? You got two tight ends in, whether you're motioning one in the backfield, creating a, you know, a one tight end on the line, one in the backfield. You know, you're creating different looks from that 12 personnel. But you've got two wideouts on the field, right? And LaFleur, most likely, how he's doing this is he's finding the guys that he thinks are the best blocking type wide receivers as well. And that's, I guess, how he's fitting in who he's got on the field right now. And
Jay Wicks is playing more.
Yes. Yeah, so, and that's where he's fitting them in. And that's where the reps are going, supposedly. So whether or not Reed starts to get more reps in 12 personnel, we'll see, right? Like, that's all. That's the question that we'll see if that gets answered. Now, whether they're not in 12 personnel and they're in 11 or whatever it may be, is he getting open? What are the routes he's running? I'd have to go back and start looking at that over the last 2 weeks and see, or 3 weeks really, and see what the deal is. Because like, that's not something I've been paying attention to as much since now that it's being brought up now, right? Like, now that it's become an issue.
So I think it was, and then we'll take a break and move on. But I think it was a fair, because LaFleur, I asked LaFleur about it on Monday, and LaFleur basically said that the Lions stayed in base even when they went three wides, when they went 11 personnel, and he wanted to run the ball when he realized that he still had Josh Jacobs on the team after the first couple series, and so they did go more 12 personnel. So that's how Jaden Reed ends up playing only 25 of the 50 snaps on offense, right? So that's obviously a problem. But it's not like that's been the case. He has played 63% of the snaps on the season. And more importantly, you know, you look at what he's been able to do. He's still leading the league, still leading the team in receiving yards and receptions, despite having eight catches over the last four games. So obviously he had been a priority and playing greater snaps earlier. So this is one of the many things.
Jason, I just wonder. I understand what both you guys are saying, but is there, if you're a true number one, do you have a four or five game stretch like that? If you have a really good quarterback, I don't know of any. And I'm not saying no. He isn't, but obviously that is a concern. And then do you start wondering, Christian Watson's emerging. You know, this is with Dobbs not even being in the mix for a couple of these games. Mm-hmm. So the question is, the Packers still viewing right. him as that number one, or do they still love this ensemble cast, even though Jaden Reed, I think, if you'd asked me 4 weeks ago, I'd say no doubt. But you don't see number one wideouts unless there's an injury. You don't see production drop off that much. You just don't.
So I would just to answer your question. I think one of the things Matt LaFleur admitted, and I guess, Brian, you can speak to this much better than I can. I think what Matt LaFleur admitted was we got to play him at wideout more instead of inside. And if you remember when you were playing with Cobb, like, yes, Cobb was a short wide receiver, right? He was 5'9", 5'10". He still could get open as an outside receiver. Like, there were plenty mm-hmm. of times where he lined up opposite of Jordy Nelson and somebody else was in the slot. Or you guys just went two wide receivers. So I think that was one of Matt LaFleur's admissions to us on Monday, is that I'm not giving him enough opportunities outside. So maybe that changes yeah. this week, too. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, predominantly, I mean, I think that'd be an interesting breakdown to see his slot reps versus, mm-hmm. I guess, perimeter reps. I guess that'd mm-hmm. be an interesting thing to see. We also have to remember he takes a lot of slot reps because he does a bunch of motioning into the backfield, right? And he gets a lot of jet motions. He does a lot of things where he motions into the backfield and goes out the other side, and there's a lot of they do a lot of different things with him, right, that they don't do with other guys. So a lot of the offense, at least it has been, has been very Reed, like, built around. I mean, I get it's a Jacobs and Jordan Love built offense, right? Like, I understand that, but he's been a very big part of it with how they use him and how they move him around. So it'll be interesting to see now that this is, like, become – such an issue over the last 4 weeks, right? Eight catches in 4 weeks. It's not like an accident, right? Like something, you know, it's not like a, you know, mistake. It'll right. be interesting to see how they approach this week, because, like, as we start to get to this point in the season, right? Like, these become, like, now, I mean, I always look at December as must-win football games, right? So when you have must-win football games, who do you get the ball to in must-win football games? You get it to the guys that are the big-time players, right? Like, you put it in the hands of the guys that you trust the most. So, like, we'll see how, you know, how Reed's deployed with Watson and if Dobbs is back, you know. So, like, it'll be interesting to see him. I hope they can do it, because I think we have a bunch of talent. It's just, can they all get on the field at once and get the reps that they're all looking for? I don't know. That's the tough part about it.
We got plenty of snaps still with Brian Bulaga. More with him next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in. But when I go back home, I've got some famous
friends. As we roll on with Brian Bulaga on Wilde and Tausch.
All right, Blue, we have not talked O-line. I know you like watching the front seven. I like watching that. We watched it in that first half, and we were kind of dumbfounded. And actually, David Bakhtiari was giving some critique of Zach Tom, who struggled a little bit. What did you see when you looked back at that film of why Green Bay's offense, for really most of that first half, struggled as much as it did against a lot of guys that weren't playing for this Detroit defense when the season started?
Yeah, it was probably the one thing about the game that surprised me the most, because I think it was probably Green Bay's, I mean, from an offensive line standpoint, from what I think was probably their worst game played up to this point in the season. From a pass blocking standpoint, right? I think they've been really solid pass blocking all season. Like, I think, I don't know what their grade is from the ESPN standpoint or the PFF standpoint. Like, I don't really care about that. It's really from just watching them and seeing the time Jordan Love's had and you know, what they've been able to do. And, I mean, I don't like to, like, especially when tackles are really good, like, call out a bunch of things. But, like, Zach Tom's first play, I mean, we all saw it, like, gave up a sack on the first play of the game. Like, very unlike him to do something. I mean, on the first play of the game, it's very not like him, right? And we kind of saw that happening throughout the game, not just sacks, but a lot of pressures, a lot of things that were uncharacteristic of that group. And the one thing I noticed from the tackles specifically, they played with very high pad level, which wasn't something that I was used to seeing those guys do. Tom in particular, he normally plays with a very good pad level and base. And Bach brought something up in that players only thing. He played with Tom, obviously. So he was there early on when he saw Zach Tom developing. And what he said was Zach Tom struggles with power. And as I've always said, every tackle has something that they struggle with, no matter what. It doesn't matter who you are, you have a weakness, right? And that's for the best tackles and the up and down Hall of Famers, no matter what. It's how you're able to cover those up and make them into not a strength, but something you can manage throughout a game that doesn't expose you, right? And Zach Tom's able to do that really well, because he normally plays with very good leverage and he gets his hands on guys really quick so that they can't get into his body. He's able to anchor down as fast as he can and push guys up the field where his feet kind of take over. Well, when you play with a higher pad level and you're not the best at taking on power and you're going against a power rusher in Za'Darius and he catches you on your inside shoulder after two steps, it's not going to go well. And that was kind of the theme of what was happening to our tackles throughout the game. And that was what I was seeing, was like a very specific plan that Detroit's DNs were doing, because it was like a 1-2-3-step bull rush inside shoulder of our tackles. They did not want Jordan Love getting outside of the pocket, right? They were trying to collapse that thing and keep him inside the pocket so Jordan Love couldn't get out and extend plays and do what he does really, really well, and that's break the pocket like we all used to see Aaron do and make things happen down the field. And that was by design. And tackles have to adjust to that on the fly. They have to start feeling that early on, like, hey, they are trying to bull and pin in our quarterback. I have to start setting anchor a lot quicker and kind of start to, you know, widen this pocket out. And it wasn't bad the entire game, right? Like, I'm not saying that, but there were moments in there that it just wasn't, like, it wasn't up to their standard. And then it was a lot of the same on the interior as well. And that was why, like, I just looked at it from a whole. It was probably that group's worst showing from a pass blocking standpoint. And they're going to have to be better this week. I mean, they're going to have to be better this week. Like, and there's no doubt in my mind that Butkus and Steno, I mean, they were probably in that O-line room watching that, and they've been harping on that. Because you said it, Tausch, like, when you go up against a group, I get it, like, you're in Detroit and they're a good team, but, like, when you go up against a group that's majority, backups and maybe even and third string guys, and that happens, that's not what you're looking for. And I'm not sure, and I can't imagine it was the case that maybe the guys, you know, they were a little at ease, right? They were thinking, oh, well, they're missing this guy and they're missing this guy, and you know, not that they took their, you know,
Blue, did you? That's an interesting question. Did you look at it that way? Because, listen, man, you go on the road, and I'm not going to bring up Leonard Little in the Dome up in St. Louis. Guy was grease lightning and strong as a bull. Like, I'm going to sleep better if I'm playing against some big, stocky, physical DN that's interested in stopping the run than I'm going to when I'm going to St. Louis and I got to go against somebody that's really good. Like, how did you approach that? There's no doubt you don't let down, but maybe your focus isn't as high because I always felt like on the road, when we go to the Metrodome, man, I would be just physically and mentally exhausted. I can remember Cliffy on the back of a bus. We ran scat protection like 48 times. And Cliffy, you know, he's pretty laissez-faire. He was pissed because it was, geez, you know. Mm-hmm. That's where, yeah. I guess the question is, it takes more energy mentally when you're on the road. And I wonder how much of that, but that was early in the game. How did you approach it when maybe somebody, if Bosa wasn't playing and they had some guy that you felt like you loved that matchup, how did it, where you didn't let that kind of mentality slip a little bit when you maybe had somebody that wasn't as good?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky line to walk because, you know, obviously you're I don't like the word relieved. You're not upset that marquee guy isn't there, right? Like you're not upset about it. But at the same time, I always looked at it as there'd be nothing more than that backup DN, what he would like to do, than embarrass you and show you up on national television. Because you knew, I mean, the way I always looked at it was, I'm on the Green Bay Packers. I'm blocking for Aaron Rodgers. There's nothing more that would make this backup DN's day than to sack Aaron Rodgers and embarrass me. So, like, I always looked at it as, he's not going to ruin my day, because I know if I go back into my O-line room and I give up a sack to a backup DN and I got worked all day by him, I'm going to get, like, razzed in our room. And, like, it's going to look bad on me when I go in the offensive room, right? And we're watching the negative highlights and there's me getting beat by a guy that has taken 10 snaps all year. So, like,
Antoine Odom, are you kidding me? This guy just made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, like something like that. Like, so, like, that was my mentality with it. So it was just like, and listen, I'm not saying those guys did that. Like, I'm definitely not saying that. But, like, it just seemed that from a whole, like, the front five, they just seemed like if they didn't have enough, like, solid tape on these guys, like they were, like they didn't, like, you know what I mean, like I don't know what it was, but it just seemed like some of these guys, like, they caught him off guard with some things, right? And it just, and it, I don't know, man, like, but all I know is that they definitely, going to Seattle, they got to be better, and I think they will. I think they're going to learn a lot from it. I think they will, because I think they're a prideful group. So I think they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Was that
and
what
that
was
crowd noise? There's no place. Go ahead, Jace.
Was that what was said in the offensive line meeting room after the September 2009 game in which Antoine Odom had five sacks against you guys in a game?
I was not there. They had brought me back, I think, a week later.
Yeah.
But I had heard the stories. Everybody's got these memorable tackles block ends. We heard that many times. There's always these quotes that ring true, and especially with City Bob always sitting there, and he'll bring up something. If somebody gets beat, he'd be like, Antoine Blanket Odom. Like, Antoine Odom is always going to be remembered in that O-line room, doesn't matter how many years, because the story passes down like a fishing story, right?
Yep. Okay. I heard the story. My first time in the O-line room, I think I got told the story. Like, literally, I think we were watching cut-ups my first spring there. I think it was a Bengals game. Oh, and some people were saying it. And I'm turning around like, yeah, he got five sacks against us in 09. I'm like, oh. I was like, I literally was like, turned around. I'm like, five sacks in a game? Like, that's a real thing in the NFL? I'm like, who is this guy? And they're like, I don't even know if he's in the league. Like, they're like, I'm like, really?
Yeah, he made a
like
pro,
five sacks.
He made a Pro Bowl that one day, is what I think was the moral of that story.
All right, Brian, before we let you go, I do have to ask you this, and I told Tausch I would. So, obviously, Brett Favre has been back in the news for the hand-delivered sack to Michael Strahan to break Mark Gastineau's record. The 30 for 30 is coming out. Brett Favre apparently confronted by him last year, then taking to Twitter to lie about what happened on the play. I'm curious, what's the angriest you ever got at your quarterback?
Because oh, great question.
Because I was there that day at the Meadowlands, and Tausch was pissed because that offensive line came into the game saying, this blankety blank is not getting the NFL record against us. We are not going to allow it. And then their quarterback, being a bad teammate, nice guy to the opponent, but a bad teammate to his offensive lineman, gift-wrapped the record-breaking sack for Michael Strahan. And Tausch was none too pleased, nor were his line mates. What's the angriest you ever got at your quarterback?
Oh, great question.
Yeah, you know, there was a playoff game at home. It was the famous Giants boat game. When the Giants came to Green Bay, and the first quarter, like, we were like we get into the first quarter and we're blocking the Giants D line and like we're locking them up. Like, we feel really good, like, you know, but Aaron just continued to get sacked, like, for no reason, like, just continued to get sacked and sacked. Like, we had three drives end in sacks for absolutely no reason. And on the third sack, he tried to I have my guy two hands hemmed up, like, I'm just, and he tries to run through the B gap. My guy just outstretches his arm, grabs him, and sacks him. And I turn around and look at him, like, I'm literally like, I'm like, where are you going? I'm like, well, like, and he just kind of like gets up and we go to the sideline. And I remember TJ, he's like losing his mind. Like, TJ's at, cause it's like, I think the Giants were winning like 7-0 at that point. Right. And like, we felt like we were playing good up front. TJ's losing his mind. I think TJ went down the sideline and went over and like talked to Aaron. Don't really know what he said. I don't know. But like, all of a sudden, like, second quarter comes around and Aaron flips the switch. And I think we blew him out. That was, you know, the Hail Mary at the end of the second quarter to Cobb in the back of the end zone. I think we beat him like 34 to 14 or something. And it was like, what just happened there? Like, it was like, it was the one time, like I never minded Aaron holding the ball and like, you know, he takes it, okay, like, whatever. But, like, it happened, like, three series in a row, and I was like, come on, man. Like if it was against good DNs and he would get sacked, you'd be like, oh, okay. But, like, when you're – it's, like, guys that should not be getting sacks or getting sacks, you're like – because you come off on the sideline, and Campy's like – and you'd look at Campy, and he's like, not on you. Not on you. And you're like, well, guess what? Everyone thinks it's on me. Like, everyone's saying it's on me. I can assure you that. And it's like, you know, but that's the life of an offensive lineman. That's
I know Jason definitely was. He thought you played like crap that game.
Wrong game. Brian, your memory is great. You started the show. You were right. You lost in 18 in Seattle last time the Packers played there. The playoff game against the Giants, you won 38-13. You were down 6-0 early.
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers was sacked 5 times in that game, 4 times in the first half.
Wow.
Only once in the second half.
That's what I'm saying, dude. It was absolutely insane. I'm just
Hey Blue, how did Aaron respond? Because Aaron was a young player when I was blocking for him. How did he respond? Did he tell TJ to blank off, or is he like, yeah, you're right?
I think he like, because I remember I looked down and I think Aaron might, I don't know what exactly he said, but he came down because we stopped him and he came down and, you know, we were going that way and the flip of the, and he came over and he looked at, and he just was like, I got it. Like, he looked at, he's like, I got it. And we're like, okay, that's all he says. Like, I got it. And we're like, all right.
It's as close
like,
as
he got the message. Like, I got it. Like, all right.
It's as close like, as you're getting to an, I'm sorry from that guy.
Brian, yeah, we didn't, you know, you never need a nice, I mean, we never needed an, I'm sorry. Never wanted that. But just like, it, you know, simple, like, I got it, guys. Like, you know, okay. Sounds good.
And he did. And he did have it.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And he did get it. He definitely got it. There's no doubt.
Brian, you're the best, man. This was so much fun. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is Brian Bulaga with, man, that's a good story. That's really good stuff.
Pretty good recall.
His recall was on point. Just like Coors Light is on point when the mountains are blue and you know that it's chilled to perfection.
Indeed, Coors Light brewed with that three-step cold process, cold lager, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's made to chill. I bet Blue, after he and TJ and the crew yelled at old boy and they won that game, I bet that'd be a good time to crack one of those Coors Lights and make sure the mountains are blue. That's when you know the cold-activated bottles and cans are chilled to perfection. That's why this Coors Light in my hand, when I need a moment to chill, celebrate responsibly, Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
A new league record of 10:18, the end of the 9 o'clock hour. The 10 o'clock hour starts in 2 minutes, so stick around. It's Will Dean's House.